Early this morning, Yugoslav police arrested former President Slobodan Milosevic at his home in Belgrade. The arrest came after a 36-hour standoff between armed Milosevic loyalists and Yugoslav security forces. Milosevic faces Yugoslav government charges of abuse of power and corruption. He is also wanted by the United Nations War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague to face trial for alleged crimes against humanity during his reign as Yugoslavia's dictatorial leader. Milosevic has lived under virtual house arrest since he fell from power last October. NPR's Silvia Poggioli has this report on the man who led his country through more than a decade of violence and tyranny.
An incident on April 24, 1987, thrust a gray party hack into the limelight. As head of the Serbian Communist Party, Slobodan Milosevic was sent to the southern province of Kosovo to help calm angry crowds of Serbs. The Serbs were claiming they were being mistreated by the province's Albanian majority and beaten by police. As he was jostled by a crowd of unruly, unshaven Serbs, the stiff communist official hesitated a few seconds. Then, seizing the moment, he told the crowd, "You will not be beaten again." With those few words uttered in Kosovo, the cradle of Serbian nationhood, a party hack was transformed into an ultra-nationalist demagogue. In the following 2 years, Milosevic made a sweeping purge of party ranks. Mass rallies multiplied. Gone were the speeches on economic reform, replaced by ominous warnings of impending fascism and persecution of Serbs. In November 1988 in Belgrade, Milosevic told a crowd of tens of thousands, "We will triumph at home and abroad. Serbia's enemies are massing against us. We say to them, we are not afraid. We will not flinch from battle. We enter every battle to win." The war cry was echoed by the mass media, which he tightly controlled. State-run TV was filled with undocumented tales of hundreds of rapes and murders of Serbs allegedly committed by Kosovo's ethnic Albanians. By 1990, Kosovo had been stripped of its autonomy and reduced to a virtual police state. Playing on Serbs' deep-rooted sense of persecution, Milosevic grew in popularity. Slavoljub Djukic is author of a critical biography of Milosevic.
You should have been here in 1988, 1989, when hundreds of thousands of people shouted his name. Slobo, freedom, Slobodo. And if one man, almost overnight, becomes the most popular, the most famous leader in the whole European area, it must affect his psychological side. He didn't know himself where he was.
Milosevic the warmonger was not the image he projected when he first appeared on the political scene. He was first an economist who worked for a period at the New York office of the main Yugoslav State Bank. He later lured several young scholars to join him in a new research group. One of them was economist Yuri Bajec.
He was one of these new politicians, you see. New politicians, he has seen the world, he has finished university, he was speaking English at that time quite well. He was interested in market economy. He was interested to organize young people to talk to him about economy. So, I mean, you know, and so he looked quite well when you compared him to, let's say, to the old party bureaucrat.
Milosevic was born in 1941. All that's known about his early years points to a troubled family history. His father was a Serbian Orthodox priest who abandoned the family and then committed suicide. His mother killed herself years later, as did a favorite uncle. Journalist Duško Doder, author of Milosevic's Portrait of a Tyrant, believes these traumas made Milosevic callous to atrocities and the suffering of others.
At one point, Milosevic was in a small circle of friends, had a few drinks and so forth. This was before the war started. And he said, "Well, if we, you know, if 200, 300,000 people get killed, but we restore, it's worth restoring Dušan's kingdom, see, the Tsar Dušan from the 13th century or whatever," which tells you it's an insight into the man who didn't care about human beings.
Milosevic once showed unyielding determination to unite all Serbs in one country. When Croatian President Franjo Tudjman began steering his republic toward independence, Serbs living in Croatia had feared for their safety. It was Milosevic who successfully exploited still vivid and brutal memories of World War II when hundreds of thousands of Serbs were slaughtered by Croatian fascists. In 1991, with the help of the Serb-dominated Yugoslav army, the war in Croatia was launched with the hope of creating a greater Serbia. A year later, when Bosnia declared its independence, Milosevic further fanned the flames of Serbian nationalism. He raised the specter that the republic's Muslim majority wanted to impose a fundamentalist Islamic state. And for more than 3 years, Milosevic proxies, extremist local warlords and paramilitary groups bombed and besieged the capital Sarajevo, ethnically cleansed nearly half the territory, and carried out some of the most brutal war crimes of the 20th century. But the man who inspired, funded, and armed the militias always publicly distanced himself from the forces he had spawned. In June 1992, he told reporters,
"We are not supporting any military action in Bosnia and Herzegovina. We are only supporting our people to survive there with the humanitarian and civilian help."
While an abundance of unsavory nationalist leaders can share blame for the breakup of Yugoslavia, it was Milosevic who was most responsible for its bloody dismemberment. And throughout his political career, his closest partner and most trusted advisor was his wife Mirjana, a strident communist ideologue who also had a tragic family history. The ruling couple lived a reclusive life, depicted variously as Gothic horror, pulp fiction, or even Shakespearean tragedy. One Belgrade intellectual described the Milosevic home as the Court of Macbeth, saying the husband was in love with his wife's madness. At heart, Milosevic didn't believe in any grand vision. His only goal was pure power, but he was a master tactician. When the dream of Greater Serbia was shattered in 1995 as NATO bombed Bosnian Serb targets and 200,000 Serbs were expelled from Croatia, Milosevic reshaped himself as peacemaker. He signed the Dayton Plan for Bosnia. 2 years later, when hundreds of thousands of Serbs took to the streets, Milosevic defused the protest by finally recognizing opposition victories in municipal elections. A Milosevic paradox was his insistence on observance of the appearance of legality, such as elections and the parliamentary process. Duško Doder.
See, Milosevic wanted to be respected. He wanted respectability, really. And to be respected, you have to follow these procedures.
Milosevic, though known as the Butcher of the Balkans, still craved recognition of international statesmen. But that wish was shattered in May 1999. As NATO was bombing Yugoslavia to stop Milosevic's crackdown of Kosovo Albanians, the International War Crimes Tribunal indicted him. A few weeks later, his country in physical and emotional tatters, Milosevic made yet another tactical retreat. He bowed to NATO and withdrew his troops from Kosovo, virtually yielding that sacred Serbian land to foreign occupiers and to its majority Albanian population. Duško Doder describes the man whose legacy is a Serbia mired in poverty and isolation and drained of many of its best educated people.
He's sort of a village type, there's village smartness, cunning. There's no vision whatsoever. This man understood, how to maintain power in Serbia. He was a man without any kind of moral scruples, and in the process, he was more destructive for the Serb nation than any single leader since Prince Lazar.
Perhaps throughout his infamous career, Milosevic truly believed he would one day join the prince, Serbia's legendary hero, whose Kosovo defeat by the Turks 600 years ago, Serbs still celebrate in song. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News.